If you fell outward to the limit of the universe, would you find a board fence and signs reading dead end? No. You might find something hard and rounded, as the chick must see the egg from the inside. And if you should peck through that shell or find a door, what great and torrential light might shine through your opening at the end of space? Might you look through and discover our entire universe is but one part of one atom on a blade of grass? Might you be forced to think that by burning a twig, you incinerate an eternity of eternities? That existence rises not to one infinite, but to an infinity of them?
A cloud is made of billows upon billows upon billows that look like clouds. As you come closer to a cloud, you don't get something smooth, but irregularities at a smaller scale. That was written by Benoit Mandelbrot, who was a Polish-born mathematician who lived from 1924 to 2010. He is famous for coining the word fractal in the mid-1970s. A fractal is any natural or mathematical system which features similar patterns at many different scales. Examples of systems in nature with fractal properties would include Dr. Mandelbrot's cloud, or a fern leaf, or the forks and sub-forks of a lightning bolt, or the splay of limbs of winter trees against the sky, or frost crystals on a window pane, or broccoli. Fractals in nature are by definition finite. If you zoom in closer and closer to your broccoli, after a while you won't see smaller subflorets anymore, but you'll see individual broccoli cells and then the molecules that they're made of, and so on. And if you zoom out, once you get to the level of your big head of broccoli, you could maybe stretch it a little bit and say, well, there's thousands of broccoli plants in the field that this grew in, and there's thousands of broccoli fields on the planet Earth, but unless there are broccoli galaxies that we don't know about, then you're done. In the natural world, when you're playing with fractals, sooner or later, in either direction, you run out of layers. So if you want a taste of the infinite, you need to switch over to the world of math. If you do not have a math brain, please don't worry. There will be no division or multiplication or square roots or anything this morning. This is about intuitively graspable, gorgeous patterns. Maybe a better way to describe what I want to try to do this morning is that I would like to offer you three different mind-expanding and intriguing ways to think about the permeable border between the finite and the infinite, and then play a little bit with the metaphors they produce and try to draw some useful conclusion about our existence as humans in the universe. Our first fractal playtime begins with this, the yin-yang symbol. As you can see, it is a circle made up of two identically shaped regions. One region is usually drawn as black, the other as white, and then the small circle in each half is filled in with the opposite color. In Chinese philosophy, yin and yang are words for how, in the natural world, supposedly opposite or contrary forces are actually complementary, interconnected, and interdependent, and for how they give rise to each other as they interrelate to one another. Each region of the circle represents one half of many dualities, black and white, dark and light, feminine, masculine, moon, sun, earth, heaven, spirit, form. And the idea of the opposite color spot in the middle of each region is that in each duality, some of each principle or quality appears in its opposite. But that is not the most fun that we can have with this symbol, because there's a potential for fractal play here. Consider, for example, that the overall symbol is a circle, but there are two smaller circles in it. So if you want, you could take the overall symbol and shrink it down and put it in the two smaller circles, which would generate four more even smaller circles, and then you could do the same thing and drop those tiny sub-yin-yang symbols inside, and so on forever, without ever stopping, infinitely. By the same token, this is a circle, which you could imagine as being one of the two circles in a bigger yin-yang symbol, which in turn could be one of the two circles inside an even bigger one, and that progression also continues forever. Then you get something like this. So here we are, as it appears, rising up out of something, and we never reach the biggest limit. We just rise forever. Also, we could just as easily be diving in as rising out, and that also would go on forever. One of the things that intrigues me here, besides the infinite swooping, is the sense of a loop. Is there actually any difference between diving into and rising up out of? They both go on forever, and we see in both cases the same patterns. The smallest part of this contains the whole. The whole is nothing but the smallest part. Inside and outside, in a way, become meaningless concepts. And if we map this onto human experience, if we look at ourselves as a version of this, suddenly we become somehow both nothing and everything at the same time. We disappear, but we also contain multitudes. And it's pretty, it's fun, at least if you have a math geek brain like I do, it's pretty and fun. So what I take away from this infinitely nested yin-yang symbol is a whimsical definition of existence. We may or may not in fact exist in this moment or eternally, but somehow, somewhere, joy is being felt. Without perhaps being entirely sure what the word I means, these words can be said. I feel geeky glee, therefore I am. Fractally math plaything number two. I don't have an internet video for this one, so you're just going to have to picture it. It has to do with spirals, or more correctly, helices. A helix is a three-dimensional shape, like a spring, or a DNA molecule, or a slinky. You remember slinky toys, right? Imagine that you have a slinky, an infinitely long one, and imagine that you drape it loosely around itself to make a bigger meta slinky shape. Then build that until it's long enough to bend, and bend it around on top of itself again and make a meta super slinky, and so on. Another sort of repetitive pattern that you can do forever. And again, that's only half of it. You can also zoom in on the original slinky and get down and see that what you thought originally was a smooth wire is in fact a little micro slinky. And then zoom in on the micro slinky and see it's even a tinier little nano slinky, and so on, also forever and ever. One day in 1940, the physicist Richard Feynman received a telephone call from a colleague, a Professor Wheeler, who said, "Feynman, I know why all electrons have the same charge and the same mass." "Why?" said Feynman. "Because they're all the same electron." Wheeler went on to suggest that all electrons could be part of a single line, like a huge tangled knot, as good a definition as any of infinitely nested helices, and that any moment in time is represented by a slice through the hyperspace-time in which the knot exists, and then each place the slice cuts the knot represents an electron in that moment. This version of our play, this infinitely nested slinky model, brings me as close as I can come in words to my own personal concept of creation. I imagine that there's only one thing that actually exists, a single zero-dimensional point, call it God or is or whatever you like, and that particle is flying around infinitely fast on a tangled path of infinitely nested helices. And we and everything else in the universe are tiny parts of the afterglow of the pattern it weaves as it hurtles through time and space. Our third and final fractal plaything is no doubt the most famous fractal ever, and the other thing Dr. Mandelbrot is known for besides inventing the word fractal. It's named for him. It's called the Mandelbrot set. There's some beautiful and amazing math behind this image, but please don't worry if math makes your brain freeze up. I won't go into the technical details. Well, maybe just a little bit. What I would mostly like to do, though, is try to tell you in non-math geek terms why I think the Mandelbrot set is so astounding and astonishing.
In layperson, hello.
So how this works is, this is a graph, and every point on the graph represents a number, a certain kind of number called a complex number. And you pick a number, a spot there, for example, and you feed it into a simple math machine. And then it gives you an answer, and you take the number that you got for the answer, and you feed it back into the machine again, and it gives you a new answer. And you just keep doing that over and over and over and over again. And one of two things happens. The first possibility is, after a while, the numbers that the machine is spitting out settle into a repeating pattern of finite numbers. If that happens, the point that you started with is in the set, in the black region. Or, option number two, the number that you started with, after a while, the numbers that come out of the machines just start getting bigger and bigger, and then they go shooting off into infinity, and in that case, the number you started with is outside the set. So in a way, what we are looking at is a picture of the border between the finite, the central black area, and the infinite, the surrounding area. But here's the really cool thing. Say you decided you wanted to see the exact shape of the line between the finite and the infinite, and you start zooming in. What you discover is that there is no line. The closer you look, the more complex the border between the regions turns out to be. And the coolest thing of all is that variations of the same shape just keep showing up over and over again. It's a fractal. You can zoom in forever and just keep seeing different variations of the same beautiful shapes, and you never reach a clear border between the finite and the infinite. So for me, this is another possible picture, like our yin and yang zoom before, of how you might think of two things as opposites and clearly separate, self and other, self and creation, finite and infinite. But when you look closer, you realize that in between them is not a simple line, but a lacy scrollwork of intertanglement, a gorgeous deep dance. It does go on forever, but this video is almost done. Hang in there. I'll wrap up by making a few observations about these models and the grand metaphor for life that they embody. It's a fun metaphor to play with. For example, with regard to self and creation, one way these models invite us to see ourselves is as persistent little eddies in our little patch of the infinite swirling. Being born could be seen as spinning out free from the confluence and interplay of the swirls that are our parents, and dying could be seen as a final spinning out, a last dissipation into the infinity of other swirls around us. Then with regard to self and other selves, when my swirl touches your swirl, that's human connection. And if at a certain level we pick up bits and pieces of each other's fractal patterns, that's communication and teaching and learning. And if we get more entangled than that, really start mixing it up, that's empathy and friendship. And if we just let go and open up all the way and begin swirling together as far as we can see up and down the fractal chain in both directions, that's love. Another detail that gives me joy. There is a way in which scale is not relevant here. Little swirls and big swirls, they're all part of the big dance. They all matter. If out of my swirling I perform a small act of kindness for a stranger, that matters. If 5 million people and their individual swirlings get together in March, that matters. And when one person creates, say, a protest video on YouTube that goes viral, that matters. And it's lovely how prone the scale is to shifting. You never know when your small swirl is going to echo up or down through the layers. There are certain elements that this dance specifically does not contain. For example, there is no overt mapping here for the concepts of good and evil. In fact, there are no absolutes in this model, no binary categories. There is therefore also no sense of safety arising out of simple categories. These infinities I'm describing this morning, they are not secure or safe. They do not mean us harm, but they are not benevolent either. They are beautiful, but also impersonal in their ungraspableness. And when, if you accept the model, we swirl out at the end of our lives, there is no provision for the eternal survival of our essences. Instead, there's a more complex comfort to be taken in the idea that the swirls we made for a while echo and contain and continue to exist within all the swirls we came from and those we intertangled with and those that came after us. I've been thinking a lot recently about fundamentalism. I would really like to understand human minds that commit to the idea that they have figured out the one true path to salvation. And in relation to these fractal models, I see these fundamentalist ways of thinking as saying, no infinite spirals for me. I have found the perfect circle. Or, I have found the perfectly straight line. And the problem I see with that is circles have insides and outsides, and lines have this sides and that sides. And so someone else is always excluded. Someone else is always other. Then it's only a small step from exclusion to feeling superior, and another small step from feeling superior to seeing others as less than human, and from seeing others as less than human follows prejudice and hate, cruelty and war. I totally understand the desire for certainty and safety. We live in dire times. But still, when you reduce creation to a circle or a line, something always gets lost. By itself, the finite is pure, but also sterile. And the infinite is likewise pure, but also too remote to be really useful to us mortals. Neither by itself can explain the fabulous mess of our human consciousness. We are finite beings whose minds and hearts and souls can encompass infinities. So it's the complex, uncertain, risky border between the two where the fun and the living happens. There is a dance, swirls making more swirls on and on forever. And lucky us, we get to be part of that dance. It is what makes us fully human.